Review Episode 1, Beginnings and Endings, is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. My name is Grace. Of course, I'm not alone. First, someone who exists infinitely and is himself in every second between his birth and his death. It's DM Philly. Philly, how you doing?
I am good. I do. I'm here. I'm then. I'm tomorrow. I'm everywhere. I exist infinitely.
We do audio only, but as I was doing this, your eyes went wide. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's you. That's Philly.
You know my secrets, Grace.
Next, the person I always call when I need to know what an elephant looks like. It's Ariel. Ariel, how you doing?
Sigmundus Creatus Est. I'm very excited.
Elephant Est.
Elephant Est. The translation is wrong. It's actually about an elephant.
Mm-hmm. But I can't. And thus the elephant was created.
And thus the elephant stepped on all of us. Super excited to be starting season two.
Season two, a little bit of a time jump. I mean, that's, you should expect that when you come to Dark. There's many time jumps.
Yes.
It's true. But as we get going, make sure you subscribe, postshowrecaps.com/dark as we venture into the second season, and we'll ultimately cover the third season as well. And as a reminder, last week, we debuted our feedback form, postshowrecaps.com/dark feedback, and you're welcome to submit. People did that last week, and it was for this episode, and it's the delight. It's great. All in one place. So yeah. Let's chat about the season two premiere. This is sort of, I think, where I jumped into the show. But Rich, what'd you make I talked about the time jump. Did it work for you, this in a show that's so much about time, to actually pass over a little bit of time in season two, to start season two anyway?
I love it. I think that amidst what they're doing here, they've got a cast of like a bunch of young people, right?
Yeah.
And some of these folks are growing up pretty quick. And this is a challenge. It's handcuffs that you're putting yourself in when you start casting kids in a television show that's going to run for a couple of years. So I think it's a really brilliant device that allows them to like carry these kids forward without having to like, I mean, we're still playing a lot with them going down. There's points where we're going to have Lewis Hoffman like playing a younger iteration of Jonas as we're kind of flashing back to some of the events of season one. But I think this, like, this advancement through half a year that we get at the beginning of season two is a really clever way to create some impact for the characters in world, and to like just create a great like narrative device for them to bring these kids back a couple of years later, where they've clearly aged up a little bit, and that level of maturity like translates into the characters on the show. Season two, it's just explosive. Like, as good as season one was, season two is like the meat of the sandwich in Dark. I think you end up with so much awesome stuff that I am like shot out of a cannon. I'm very excited to dive into it with you guys.
Yeah, Ariel, I'm pretty sure that our good friend Eric Divestein, I think as he was going through, like, he likes season one. Season one holds such a special place in my heart because you can jump into it. I feel like it's like a little bit smaller stakes. Mm-hmm. It's not super confusing, at least in my end. It's very much reveal focus. I've watched it so many times. And so I really love season one, but I know that Eric was saying like season two for him is really like, he thought it really, where it started to pop. To the point of the time jump, I think it's about a year and a half in between seasons. I actually don't know. Notice a lot of the aging up in our actors that much between one and two. They really notice it between two and three, but we'll get there we get there.
Yeah.
But Ariel, what'd you make of the season two premiere?
Yeah, I think the I'm all of a sudden I'm thinking of what's his name, Francisca and
Magnus.
Thank you. His hair, his like hair sweep to the side. I'm like, that's something. Like, that's a note that they like, we need to like make him look different. But
with the bleach tips, the whole deal too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. I mean, better than what we will see in season three, that's for sure, as far as I'm concerned, as far as a look. But I do agree with Eric for the most part. I think, similar to you, Grace, season one, certainly specific moments in season one that I have had the honor of helping to explain and showcase and dive deep into hold a special place in my heart as well, and some very, very high highs. But season two is to see a show, to be watching something kind of like fold over on itself in a way so successfully, and
fold it in.
So successfully executed at such a high level for something that is so complicated, as we always say, is really impressive. And to your point about the time jump thing, for me it really works Grey's Anatomy, which is the thing I love talking about, gets a lot of mileage out of this. Like any time jump, whether it's a year, 6 months, you get so much emotional mileage out of like, it's like a, it's the softest of reboots, right? Mm-hmm. Like you, the characters are the same and you know them, but you can really like dive deep into what has happened and how they are different now. In some ways have not changed at all. And in some ways are very different people and kind of have gone through things during the time jump that we didn't get to see, but are no less compelling to watch the results of.
I mean, dare I make a crazy comparison, but this is the thing I talk about a lot with Star Wars storytelling, where we have these like very big time jumps and it creates an awesome opportunity to go back. And to the point that Ariel's saying, you can now like develop the character a little bit forward. You can make a bit of a change that feels meaningful. There's like that time allows the audience to have some like plausibility to it, to a shift in their perspective from where we left them, that I think is really powerful. And just going back to like the real time, I remember watching this episode in real time when season two premiered. And to your point, Grace, like season one is so much more accessible, I think. Even though it's got these big ideas, it's a great kind of slow onboarding ramp to this really heady story. But watching these opening scenes in season two, right when they premiered, I remember like my mind ripped wide open. You know, I had to clean my brain up off the couch. It just is like so right out of the gate, like big and conceptual and heady that I love it. I get like drunk on this stuff. I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, I think there's a thing that season two does that season one doesn't do that I actually really like, which is the countdown to the apocalypse and how so much stuff is centered on, you know, this episode is 6 days until the apocalypse, which is a technique that they don't use in season one. And every time I get to season two, I'm like, oh, yeah, we're doing like the countdown thing. And I think that there's a part of me that I go back and forth on like time jumps just in terms of, sometimes it feels like, you know, obviously, you know, things happen in between, you know, do I want like micro and like, you know, I want to spend every moment with the, with these people. And like, it feels like when you jump ahead, it's like, what about all that? Didn't stuff happen in that in between time? That's also not how life works as well. That like these, you know, you have like stretches of time where like, yeah, nothing really happens in your life. And so we cut in season two to essentially like, okay, we're right on the precipice of the apocalypse happening. So I think it works really well. And the other thing I just want to say, I put a pin, I feel like all of us on PSR, there was a lot of shows that debuted recently and then talking about as they finish, like House of the Dragon and The Last of Us and unfortunately canceled Willow and The Sandman and Mayfair Witches, and talking about all this stuff about like, you know, okay, that was season one, you know, and whether it was good or bad. I think most of those things were good. There's one exception in the list of things I mentioned.
It's not Willow.
I know the one that got canceled. It's not that one. And then being like, okay, what's a season two gonna like? Okay, I'm a little nervous. You know, there's like the hesitation. And I think like Dark, just like you know, in some ways, I would agree with Eric that it's stronger. So let's dive into the recap. We get this. We get the text on the screen. And if you gaze long into an abyss, the abyss also gazes back to you. This is Nietzsche. I don't know. I don't feel like we spend a ton of time on these, like on the text, but they do this a lot, Rich. Do you have anything to note on like the Nietzsche quote? Yeah.
So the full quote, and I think a lot of people have heard it, it gets used in a lot of fiction. It's a great quote. He who fights with monsters should look to it that he himself does not become a monster. And if you gaze into an abyss long enough, the abyss also gazes into you. It's this notion of like, be careful you don't become what you pursue, right? This is the story of Jonas and Adam that we have not like necessarily revealed yet on a first watch, but the foreshadowing that gets laid out, I think it's exceptionally well at the beginning of season three too, in this quote, in this Nietzsche quote right here, is just formidable, right? This notion of like peering into the darkness and like evolving, losing sight of what you're doing, the ends justify the means, like feeding this kind of cycle. There's a lot of depth here, right? And I think that you there's a lot of like very existential philosophy you can extrapolate out of Dark. I think some people look at it as like a very nihilistic work fundamentally because of where it ends. I think a lot of people see it as a source of real positivity and optimism for what humans are willing to like sacrifice for one another in hardship. But this is the journey of Jonas that we will take, especially clarified across season two, where we get this revelation of Adam and who he is and how he got there. Right. In a big way, I think this is like a thesis of Dark, right?
Right.
Stare too long into the abyss, and like the abyss will stare back. Yeah.
It's fun because in this episode, they kind of do this with Noah. Like Noah's talking to himself, right?
And
this
Noah.
And so that's really fun. So we start in June 21st, 1921. And we see the door and these two men are working on it. We know that this is young Noah and older Bartosz, is so fun. Father and son as well. The beginning and the end, a strange idea that both should be the same. Noah is asking Bartosz, like, you no longer believe in the prophecy. And he says, I believe in the irony of fate. Adam says that all things must happen as they've always happened. And Noah's trying to tell him, we have to bear the cross no matter how heavy it seems. And in 6 days, paradise begins and hell on earth will end. And Bartosz wonders if those two are the same thing. Noah says Adam was right. Bartosz has lost faith. Bartosz asks if that's why he sent you. He says, I've waited a long time for this. It's interesting that it's you. And he sits down. I hope that the day comes that you don't believe everything Adam tells you. Ask him why he took you in and called you Noah. And then Noah kills his father, stabbing him right in the back with the pick. It's actually quite brutal, Ariel.
It's so brutal. And honestly, I'm going to say a couple of nonsensical, crazy things.
Yes.
I don't understand how Bartosz doesn't cry out in pain immediately because it's a pick. Like clearly he's gonna die soon, and he continues to like pick at that body, so he will be dead momentarily. Mm-hmm. But that first hit is not a headshot. Again, I'm not advocating for violence, but like it's on the shoulder.
Yeah,
and I'm like, and he immediately like passes out. He like hits him in the shoulder, and he's like dead. And I'm like, whoa, that's not realistic.
Well, that's how
the way
he gets the pitch
like,
on his shoulder, a chip on his shoulder,
chip on his shoulder, right? Because he time travels. But I'm like, okay, I will. The only way I can explain it is he is so like the tragedy of like being killed by his son, it like overtakes him, and he just like dies
in shock. Maybe Rich.
Yeah, I had very much the same reaction, Ariel. So I'm really glad that you're acknowledging it, because I mean, he buries a pickaxe into his collarbone, and Bartosz just like quietly falls over, you know, like as still as a stack of potatoes. It's really like brutal, you know. And the context here that Bartosz does not yet have the full weight of all this. I guess the other thing that really strikes me too is the mirroring, right? This whole beat of like the Emerald Tablet that we talked about, the like symbology of not the triquetra, but the picture that we've seen a few times of the writing and the triangle. Mm-hmm. And Bartosz has this tattooed on his chest, right?
Yeah.
And this whole idea that like, especially the further you go, Bartosz has been not a true believer necessarily. He's a skeptic, and he's been skeptical of Jonas like for a long time after they get trapped here. And the notion that he's got this tattoo of like, he's trying to convince himself, he's trying to believe, but he just can't, you know. And the incredible like tragedy of this moment, really, for like Noah, for young Hanau here, that like he knows exactly what he's doing and the implications. And it's just brutal, man. It's really heavy.
So Noah has what I'm going to call now the notebook. How do I say this?
It's the notebook. Yeah.
Noah notes, Grace. Incredible. Noah 10 notes. Out of 10.
And it's June 27, 2022, the beginning of the last cycle. So we get the time jump. Jonas and Marta are sleeping together. He says, I think we're a perfect match. Never believe anything else. And then he wakes up in the room in the future. Welcome to the future. And he has the letter June 27th of June. That's redundant. Uh-huh. The 27th of June circled on the calendar. There's a picture of him, his dad, and his mom. He takes it and he goes outside. I do like the note as he's in the future. And there's like toxic elements or whatever. It can't have a yellow rain. The rain jacket will do nothing, but he does have like a little yellow mask that yellow he pulls mask. Up over his face. And he's going to head to the bunker.
Very Watchmen TV show.
Very Watchmen. Yeah.
It's huge Watchmen. The whole apocalypse vibe is great, right? Him like creeping around the house, everything is all ash. And this is like one of like the longer kind of moments we get as he's making his way to the school and kind of scavenging stuff. And like the vibes are heavy. And to your point, Grace, this whole like ticking clock of the countdown, it's such a device in all storytelling. You want a ticking clock, you want urgency, the implications of like, we need to do the thing before the thing. And the way they do it so explicitly here is like great. The literal like countdown on the calendar, like, yep, okay, good stuff. Yep.
And so,
I do want to call out very quickly again, one of my, I guess, my favorite things, because I can't stop talking about it, is the first thing he does when he wakes up is look at the letter from his dad. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just like, okay, yes, this is a confirmation of, and it reminded me of Claudia's line from season one where she's like, and everything then came after that summer. And he just, you know, he's looking at the letter. He's like, okay, yes, this is really real. And he's thinking about everything that has happened since he first read it and tried to burn it. And
it's his constant, it's like from inception.
Yeah. Yeah. His totem.
Yeah. So he finds Claudia's tapes. He's listening to them. She's saying, we got to stabilize the God particle and find a way back. Maybe we can save them, all of them. And he puts down a pendant on a picture of Marta. So then it's June 21st, 2022, 6 days before the apocalypse. And Hannah's listening to the news about the disappearances, looking at newspaper articles. And she crosses the 21st off the calendar. So we know the calendar important here. The doctor asks Regina how she's feeling. She's clearly started chemo. Bartosz is watching, and Marta tells him to come to the bridge. This is just brutal. Regina in the in the hospital bed in the living room. It's brutal, Rich. So sad.
Yeah, it's really terrible. I mean, cancer is like a horrific and ravaging thing to have to go through with anybody, and it's really tough. It brought me back to like some of my personal experiences, but her like ferociousness at like, no, I will not go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, what are you, an idiot? I'm staying right here. And again, like we're playing with these big ideas of like, you know, radiation and all this kind of stuff. And I just circle back to that whole, the you know, Regina's like tied to the tree during like the incident in 1986. Yeah. There's like an interesting tie there. Obviously, Alexander and like the much deeper ties to the whole like nuclear plant, but it's deeply tragic. And I think that I have so much more sympathy for Bartosz, you guys. I don't want to be like a Bartosz apologist, but I think part of what's so brilliant about this character is that they establish him like right on episode one, season one, like, oh, look, he ran off with the girl our protagonist likes. And we very quickly are like, this guy's a dick. We do not like him. But ultimately, his story is one of the most tragic across like all of the very tragic stories of Dark. And as we sit here in this moment where he's like texting his girlfriend that he knows it's already over, his mother's dying in his house, like, God, this poor guy, after he just got murdered by his son, like, Bartosz gets a rough draw.
He's also going to be, when he's like so mad about Jonas, like, he's like, Jonas knows all that, like, Luna, Jonas has been looped. He's not exactly right at the top, but then also like knowing that Jonas becomes Adam, like he is right? Like he's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's wild. Yeah.
I love all those mentions of like Jonas, Adam, like even older Bartosz that we see at the beginning. And he's got some wicked tattoos to your point about the tragedy in his life, where he's got the Sigmundus on the back and on the front, or unless he got it, the one that Noah had on his back. It seems like he has it on his front.
Yeah.
I just love that he can't, like, this Jonas thing. It's like Jonas is forever in his orbit, even if he's just haunted by the specter of Jonas. It's fascinating.
It's so interesting. So much of it ties back to what we got from Tannhaus at the end of season one. There's the whole thing of why. Well, that is a big question. And this is this fundamental like fulcrum that like Dark kind of hinges on in certain ways, is this idea of like fate versus free will. And the idea that like, even if we do have free will, we don't have control over our impulses, over the things we desire, over the reasons that like we may choose to do a thing. So even if we choose to do it, we're not like choosing why we're doing it. And I don't know, Bartosz embodies that in a pretty interesting way here, but God, it's very sad, this poor kid.
I was trying to map out how are Bartosz and Jonas related? Are they related? Bartosz has a kid who have Agnes. Is Jonas's
Bartosz has a kid with, has two kids with Jonas.
Yes.
Silja, I mean, Silja
So sister-in-law?
Uh-huh.
Brother?
Half-sister to Jonas. No,
well, yeah, so that's Silja. So like, they're brother-in-laws. Eventually they'll be brother-in-laws, right? Uh-huh. Like brother-in-laws. Also, Bartosz and Silja have Agnes, who has a baby with the unknown. Is Jonas's
who
kid.
Who is Tronte, who is the father of Ulrich, who is the father of Mikkel, who is the father of Jonas.
Yeah, Yeah, well, they're super related. As is the case, I mean, they're all like
the deeper you go, once you like unlock the unknown and really start like plugging in all the pieces, like they're all related. And we're gonna like kind of see it at the end in the Sic Mundus thing when Noah's looking at all the family portraits, but like just like all the Commwalds, the Nielsens, the Tiedemans, Bartosz's family. Like there's just like so much connective tissue between all of them.
I think Bartosz is Jonas's great grandfather. I think. Let me just.
I mean, he's not that great.
Grandfather, one.
He's
great
definitely
grandfather.
Not that great. I mean, regardless.
Great grandfather. Three greats. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So missing posters on the door of the school. This is tragic. We jump ahead 6 months and like everybody's on the school the door of like all the kids who are missing, plus Ulrich, plus Helgi. Like everybody's just gone. And we meet Clausen, who's quoting Freud. He's the new head of the Vinden task force. They're going to reopen the cases entirely and review the evidence, find the lie that is hidden below the surface, and people will be resummoned for interviews. I love this. Eric's dad stands up. It's like 6 months and they send one person and the woman who found nothing. That's the task force. And this is where Clausen is just like, well, 10 people could look at an elephant from 10 different angles and give 10 different statements. A single person who sees the same elephant from all perspectives will be able to piece it together. And he's like, my son is missing. The next time I need an elephant, I'll let you know. It's so funny. It's so good. Maybe line of the episode. I also think from Cloud's point of view, what if 10 people look at the elephant from all perspectives? What about that? What about that, Clausen?
And I love Clausen looks at Charlotte and she's just like, it's not me anymore. This is your job now. I love like now that Charlotte has entered her like somewhat senioritis phase, at least as far as her real job or like her day job.
She knows about time travel
and she's like, there's no explaining this. So I'm just gonna be really cool and weird and like not really care, because I know that she's right. What I do think is interesting is she's right to not trust Clausen. Like I think to me it's clear that she's picking up on something, like, okay, this guy is like not someone I can like and beyond the whole time travel thing, just not somebody I can like trust or vibe with. But I think it's just hilarious that at the end of the episode, she goes to her real job now in her mind of like the bunker and all those pictures and trying to put it all together.
Charlotte has had that first death of naivety, right? Like now that she knows and is like, I got the pieces to like, oh my gosh. And we'll get it by the end of the episode of like the kind of unambiguous proof that there is here. I do think it's really interesting, this Freud quote, he has eyes to see and his ears to hear. It's very close to like a quote from the Bible. I think it's from Matthew, but blessed are your eyes for they see and your ears for they hear. And it goes on to like talk about this whole thing of like prophets and righteous men that have seen things that you cannot know, and this idea of secrets. And I don't know, a lot of people I think beat up on the Clausen introduction and Clausen as a character, that he's like, we spend so much time with him in season two, and that ultimately, like, I don't know how much it advances things. A lot of people feel like it's kind of fruitless and wheel spinny, but he totally causes the apocalypse because like he locks up Alexander and opens the thing. But I also think that he is this really important viewpoint back in on season two of a guy totally removed from all of this, right? Who is being very practical, very logical, and he's very smart, and he's taking these pieces apart and hitting these walls where everyone is lying to him, and he knows that they're all lying to him. And it's just a reminder to us of like, yo guys, this is batshit crazy what we're dealing with here. Like, this is really wild out there in left field stuff. And Clausen is this really grounded character. I think he gives us a great kind of perspective to watch season two from in a certain way.
I think it's very fun because I do agree with you that like Bartosz, I think this is like, I think, you know, he dies at the beginning of the episode. I think it's like a pretty good redemption story. Even Hannah has a fair bit of like, you know, she's going to kill herself. And then she has this moment with her son. That's like, you know, nice. I do kind of feel
intervenes.
Like
fate intervenes.
It sure does.
I do kind of feel like the show is like, you know, Bo and Yante were like, we probably need someone to be hateable, right? So let's bring him. Because I do agree with you that if I was watching a show where I didn't care about all the people that I had met who he has to investigate and figure out who's lying, I might root for him in like, you know, another show. Like Clausen feels like a guy who my dad would love on a TV show. He's like an anti-hero. It's cool. But the fact that he's like, you're like being, you know, you're like trying to get Charlotte like caught up. And I'm like, no, thank you, Clausen. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Yeah, leave Alexander alone, man. Poor Eugene has got enough going on.
Yeah. All right, Magnus and Francisca are together. Magnus asks if your mom talks about the investigation. And he says, sometimes I think it would be better if we just found out everybody was dead. And Francisca gets a text and says she has to go. She's going to go pick up Elizabeth, although she is lying slightly about this. We'll see what she's up to later.
I mean, she may be going to meet Elizabeth after her activity.
I mean, I'm not faulting her also. I know she has a black hole in her butt, but you know, this is stuff you got to deal with, you know?
She's wearing a very colorful shirt distract from
That's right.
Right. She's trying to hide the black hole.
And then we see
this shirt. Yeah, this is a total like random thing, but like this Magnus's shirt is so wild, it stands out to me. But it is Magnus's shirt. Yeah, he will be wearing it like later on in the season, and I love it. And another like really fundamental change for like a lot of season two here. But like, when did it in the summer? Like, it feels nice. It's sunny. It's like not raining and hellish outside. Like, it feels like a kind of nice place.
Whoever was the scouting director in season one. Between seasons, they're like, did you guys know there's a lake? Like, holy, oh man.
Yeah, really.
That's a great spot. We should use that more. Yeah. All right. Katarina's at the caves. I'm gonna hold some feedback from Steve. We got about Katarina at the caves. Then we see Jonas in the future. He's walking to the church and he passes all these crosses. He ends up finding his father's gravestone and he places the picture of them down in front of the gravestone. Sad.
I love
Sad
the
Jonas.
Little house on Marta's like gravestone thing. Like somebody made like a little steeple, whatever it's called, over her little cross. It's cute and sad.
The whole like church and the apocalypse, all the graves, it's very it's really foreboding. It's a powerful image, and like returning to this church again and again and again is such a great technique, and like the various times to see the various states of its like building, construction, disrepair, destruction.
Yep. So Marta is biking. She meets Bartosz at the tracks. He's been trying to reach her for days, and he's like, so that's it then? She doesn't respond, and Bartosz brings up Jonas. She's like, what does he have to do with this?
I'm sorry, I just can't. It's like, you won't let it go. It's so funny.
This is very much, you know, The Simpsons, you know, that guy who hates Homer? What is his name? Frank Grimes, I think, who just like everything in his life is messed up because of Homer, and Homer never thinks of him. This is how I imagine Jonas and Bartosz's relationship. Bartosz is angry at Jonas all the time. Fair enough. Right. And Jonas is like, in the future, not worried about Bartosz.
He's in the future, still worrying about Marta, trying to get back to his family and Marta.
He wasn't looking for Bartosz's gravestone, let me tell you.
Definitely. He knows where it is. It's by the caves where he had his son bury him. Yeah.
He'd probably look at Bartosz's gravestone, which, to be clear, Rich, there obviously isn't one, but he'd be like, doesn't look like anything to me.
I don't know her. I don't know her.
One thing I did want to call out was like the Marta dropping her bike off right before she meets Bartosz, like the place where the first episode, the pilot, ended. Like Mikkel has gone missing, and like clearly that's on her mind, and she mentions Mikkel like right after she starts arguing with Bartosz. So I just think it's a really good way to kind of like replant us in her emotional mind state.
Yeah, I kind of hate this argument because they're like, it's like, we already see each other, and they're both like, you've changed. And Marta's like, you're hiding something. I don't know what's up with you. And he's like, yeah, my mom is dying. And there's also stuff I can't tell you. Super cool stuff I can't tell you. And she's like, why not? And he's like, if you knew what I was going through. And she's like, bro, my father and my brother have disappeared, and my mom is crazy. So
and
like,
secretly, the man I really love is missing.
Yeah. And then she leaves, and he gets a text from an unknown sender to meet him this evening. Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant because like they're both right, but they're also both lying to each other and like being assholes. I mean, they're being like really teenagers, you know, like Marta is somebody that we kind of unambiguously love. Like, she's being really unfair.
This is not the real Marta.
I can't even speak. I will say that like credit to Marta for being like, you're so clearly hiding something from me, and it has nothing to do with your mom's cancer, which obviously is very sad, and I'm sure she sympathizes, but she's right on the money. She's like, and then later she's gonna be like, why didn't you tell me about the time travel, bro?
But on the same note, right? Like, Bartosz has got her dead to rights about Jonas. Like, yeah, this is about Jonas a little bit. Like, can we stop?
I don't call like, that.
I mean, that's very fair. We don't have to fault it, but Bartosz can.
Listen, he's worried about French baguettes and whatnot.
It's all just like, you know, it's deeply tragic, right? Because the reality is, like, I think we're joking about it, but in a way this embodies the whole problem here, right? That like the lies, the secrets, the mistruths, the deceptions that we can go back to clausen, like eyes to see and ears to hear. Like, you know, all of this is what's feeding the like greater problem, their inability to like be forthright with one another and kind of like communicate about what's going on. But they do both have each other dead to rights. And I don't know, in a certain way, I love that Marta's like embodying some of young Katarina here and is like a little irreverent and like, F you, dude. Like, I do what I want to do. You know, I'm Marta. And Marta's,
I'll tie
like,
up a young girl to a tree if I want to.
Really? Uh-huh. I don't know. The whole thing, I think it's a very weighted scene that could really just be like this juvenile, like teenage relationship, but there's so much depth happening here, right?
Yeah. So Alexander, speaking at the power plant, talks about energy creates community. The nuclear power will remain the only alternative, but this plant is being decommissioned in 6 days. He heads to a room where he puts on the hazmat suit, and they're going to bury the barrels.
He says something that I thought was really fascinating that I'm not sure, I can't remember if I've caught this before, but he says, without the power plant, Winden could not exist. Yeah. And it's actually literally true. This version of Winden that they're living in could not exist if we're not for the apocalypse and everything that happened.
No, 1,000,000%. It's brilliant. I love this notion, too, that especially for this guy who came in here completely on board with nothing, he's like, the nuclear power gives us energy. It gives us community. It gives us family. Like, this is a great positivity for him. And just amidst like some of my homework, I know that there is like a whole decommissioning of nuclear power across Germany. And they're all like expected. All the nuclear power plants are expected to be shut down by 2022, which was last year when we recorded this. So it like maps, right? It like tracked like some real world politics and maneuvering that's going on there in a way that's probably pretty poignant.
Interesting. So Hannah's at the house. She opens the box that has Alexander's passport, but also his gun. She points it at herself and the door opens. This is where stranger Jonas comes in. She's like, how do you have a key? It's like, it's my key. I know this doesn't make sense, but hear me out. And he goes through all of these things. Like, you remember the yellow bike that you gave me for my birthday? I rode into the ditch on the first day. Here's the scar. Dad was making pancakes. He dropped the pan, spilled oil on the floor. Here's the mark on the ground. You found me over 33 years ago. I knew it. I knew it was you right away. It was raining. You talked about Chernobyl. And he says, Mom, it's me. And she cries. She like sort of like slowly touches him, but then they hug as she's saying, like, it's impossible. It's a very sympathetic moment, I thought, for Hannah and stranger Jonas.
Yes. No, you mentioned the yellow bike.
Yellow bike.
Which is something I didn't catch on watching it. Yeah. And we already mentioned the like Hannah, you know, intervening or fate intervening in her death, which I thought was really interesting. And there's this like malaise. I want to get to like the part that I laughed at, but there's this serious for a second. There's this like malaise that has fallen over her, obviously. And she's like super, super depressed. She's in a horrible place. And like even earlier in the episode, when you hear the radio show she's listening to, it's like four people have disappeared. The idea that like these everyday horrible occurrences each by themselves could kind of be explained away or ignored. But now it's so many people have disappeared. And it's like, well, clearly something's going on and no one knows what that is. So like, what's the point of even living anymore? I thought it was like super powerful and sad. Hilarious though that Jonas still has his keys. Like he's been through so much.
Yep.
He's been
funny, across time. Yep.
And he's like, I still got my keys.
He kept his keys through the apocalypse. You know, the bit with the pancakes, we're going to see that in episode 6, which I think is one of like the standout episodes of the series of season 2. And all of this stuff, like it's just so charged. I love what you're flagging there, Ariel. Like it's the first time I ever clocked that like, oh, of course, fate intervened. She can't kill herself because she will go on to exist later. And we're going to come to like understand that. And Jonas like showing up at this moment is like really poignant and powerful. And, you know, you talked about it a couple episodes ago, Grace, but like this whole like moment where he's saying to her, the final stinger, I left 6 months ago and then I found you 33 years ago. I knew it was you right away. That whole beat, it like gave me goosebumps. It's just so like powerful. And it's one of like the emotional like resonances where this memory is being drawn out of her and she knows exactly what he's talking about, but it's probably not thought about it since then, right? She's like lived a lot of life up and down. And to the point of like how sad she is and this malaise that she's trapped in. This is the most sympathetic Hannah I think we ever get. Like that radio program, Good Morning Sleepy Heads, seven people are still missing. And blah, blah, blah. And I think even like keen-eyed German-speaking viewers on the clipping of the actual newspaper with all the missing people, there's a small little sideline of like, Black sphere spotted in the sky due to a freak weather phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we had that. Because
of the finale.
That's certainly a question of people like, how come Alexander and Regina are talking about the giant black orb that appeared over town? You know,
that's fair. Like, yep.
It's been clocked. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of cool stuff going on here.
Interesting. All right, we get a little bit of I think this is more Tannhaus narration. Everything happens when it must, in the right place, as if the world was a carpet made up of an endless network of endless threads, each in its own place, but very few of us know where the journey takes them. We see Franziska at the tracks. She pulls the box and Magnus is watching, and then Katarina is in the caves. Then we get Noah talking to Noah. So adult Noah talking to young Noah, saying, Adam will be proud of you. I felt the same way. It will pass. Young Noah asks why Adam took them in. He says, things are still hidden from you, but they will come to light bit by bit when the time is right. He says, how do we know what's right and what's wrong, what is good and what is evil? And Noah says, by heeding our inner voice, by not following anyone else but ourselves, our true nature reveals itself, not only in our fields, but also in our purpose. Is that what he says? It's in our fields. That feels very modern. He says, I am you. I am your voice
right now.
Yeah. In your fields.
Deeds, not only in our deeds, but in our purpose. Yeah.
My autocorrect wanted to say in my fields. I am your voice. Never forget that. Everything is connected. You, me, the past, and the future. Welcome to the future, bitch. That's what he says, I think. This is fun. I like young Noah talking to old Noah talking to young Noah. I like
I feel like it plays so well off of like the stranger locking Jonas in the bunker at the end of season one. It's so much of that same energy of like, dude, you don't understand yet, but I'm here. Also the notion that Bart has got in his head, right? That before he like kills his father, these words will like linger there. And he's saying like, but how do I know? Why did he take us in? Like he is beginning to look for the answers to these questions. And just knowing that he has no idea, like what's coming and the level of what's happening here. Like old Noah saying like, don't worry, this grief and guilt you feel over murdering your father pretty brutally with the pickaxe, you'll get over it because we're totally going to co-opt him into this cult in like 60 years. Yeah. Like it's all so heavy, man. That's really great. And again, this like this iteration of Noah before everything has fallen and he gets the final pages of the journal, this like, we're going to make Adam happy. We need to please Adam. Adam will be proud of you. When we still like don't really know what's going on with Adam, it's great stuff. It's really like building up this kind of big, scary figure that we're going to reveal in a minute in a cool way.
I remember at the time, I remember before season two, I remember thinking Bartosz was Noah. Like that was, I was like, I'm so right about this. And I was so wrong. But yeah, I mean, close, some close, you know, father and son.
You're very close.
All right. So we see Jonas walking around. There's some like corpses hanging in the forest. You hear some gunshots and some cries. So I'm like, no. And he heads out and there are these people being hanged and the people are saying like, you're hiding God. Like God needs to be shared. Elizabeth ultimately gives the order for them to be hanged. We don't know this Elizabeth at the time, but we'll learn. She says, no one can enter the dead zone. Any attempt will be punished by death. Those are the rules. We are the future. Sic mundus creatus est. And everybody repeats it. Yeah. It's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, and the way that this like plays right out of the Noah scene, right? Yeah. Like on rewatch, so much of this stuff is threaded so powerfully that you're leaping from Noah to this, because ultimately this whole notion of the prophecy is one that has been sold to her, and now she's gonna have this confrontation with Jonas at the end where he's like, I don't care about your effing paradise, but meanwhile he is the one that has sent her on the course seeking paradise and like carrying this whole Sic Mundus thing forward. Also, I know like a lot of people have questions about the apocalypse. How come Winden is like still holding up? How come there's hovercrafts? Like, why isn't everyone dead? Like, there is this larger global catastrophe that kind of spins out of it for like electromagnetic issues, tidal poles that create these like, you know, like geo scale weather anomalies and all this kind of stuff. And the notion of like the Frenchman showing up to get at this God particle is just kind of hilarious given the French delegation getting like pushed off by Claudius so many times in the next couple of episodes. episodes.
I fell into a TikTok hole that I did not like, which was, here's what happened if a nuclear bomb dropped. And it explained like every every mile, essentially what would happen to people. And I was like, yeah, I don't like this. So no, yeah, the fact you, that, please. Yeah, no thanks. No thanks. I watched the whole thing though, so I don't know. so she is going to ask Jonas, yeah, like where he was. There's nothing out there. You know, the faithless are dead. The prophecy will come true and the passage will open to paradise. He's saying, I don't care about paradise. I just want to go home. He says, what did they want behind the wall? She doesn't give an answer. And so Jonas leaves.
And this is where we like brilliantly cut from her right to Elizabeth.
Yes.
And it's like so good the way these scenes are like threading into each other and like giving us these clues.
I think I was going to say about Noah and Noah, the scene together, is that like so many that you could tell that not only do you know the casting is good, you know that the show trusts the casting when they are willing to put people in scenes together, with their own person, because there's a lot of times when like the casting is not good and you'd be like, those two people, they're not related. They can't even be the same person, you know, but this is like them sitting right next to you. Like, yeah, I buy it. I buy it.
That works. And to your point, Rich, about the threading with between the two Elizabeths, it's just standing on the shoulders of everything the viewer has learned from season one and how they put the people next to each other and cut from people to people. Yeah. So it's just like giving the viewer the benefit of the doubt that they will understand is one of the many reasons why it's very impressive.
It's really fun that, you know, in some of the interviews you get with the cast, they talk about their first pass on some of these scripts and being like, I don't know, do you think anybody is going to have a clue? And even like, well, and you have to talk about the fact that they're like, this is really complicated. Like, we might be overdoing it, but, you know, there's an audience out here for really like complex and intelligent storytelling. And I think that it's just so delightful that they got to do this and that we get to like revel in something like this, because it's so well constructed on every level. And when you watch this with like the full context of the way we thread from like the Noah to Noah scene into like future Elizabeth with Jonas back into Elizabeth with Peter, it's like, my word, this is impressive television making.
They should let them do it again.
They should. somebody give them a call.
I don't know if we talked about this. I know H99 did get canceled. Apparently they re-upped the deal with Netflix, and Netflix is still kind of maybe on board. Maybe just like the budget is going to be smaller next time.
I'm like, I said this at the time, like, can we get like a confirmation? I hope they had something in the contract, like, you will not cancel our shows prematurely or something, because to your point, Grace, I'm like, why are they so willing? I mean, whatever, in this day and age, you know, you take the deals that you can get, right? The ones in front of you. But, you know, to go through all that work and try to create a universe just to have not sure that you're going to be able to tell the whole story, I think is a little dicey. But of course, I'm excited to see what they have in their creative tank still.
It's indicative of some of the characters that we get to explore in this series, right? Unrelenting, like, pursuit of your goals. Just because, like, you face adversity, you can't back down. You're going to fail sometimes if you try, especially if you try big, you know? And it really is a gift that they got to do all three seasons of this. It's so fortunate for us because it's so well constructed as a whole.
What is this like? Dark is to Adam, he lives his pretty much his full life, whereas like poor Ed 99 is basically Bartosz, who gets killed by his father.
Yeah, kind of. Oh, that's not like circle back in time to die at the end. It really is just the Ouroboros.
All right, so Elizabeth and Peter, they're gonna search through Tannhaus's shop. They're just packing up stuff. I don't know what they don't really say where they go. They just go to check out some stuff. Why did mom keep it all? Reminds her of her family. That's a shame. She never got to meet grandpa and grandma, which is, this is what Elizabeth says. But yeah, it's just like Charlotte was still pretty young when they died. And Elizabeth finds a picture of Tannhaus and Charlotte.
Peter says to her, it reminds her family, some things it's impossible to let go of. And again, this is like the thesis of like most of the characters that we're talking about here, but most assuredly Jonas and Adam, right? So they're like hammering it so well in terms of like the greater themes of this story.
It's a really good premiere episode, I gotta say. It really is
very strong.
So Clausen is with Charlotte. Says, were you born here? Says, no, my grandfather was, but he's no longer alive. And I love this. Clausen says, have you thought it could have been him? He says, my grandfather? Says, no, Ulrich. Dude, a little twerp.
This dude is so cagey. Like, you can hate him all you want. He's great to love to hate, but he's really good at what he's doing. He is so like cold and manipulative and cunning and just like maneuvers these conversations.
Yeah. So he's like, he called you shortly before he vanished. The call lasted 12 seconds. I presume that would be a voicemail. What did he want? Charlotte says, nothing. He misdialed. Do you have the message? No. Of course not, Clausen.
What I love about Clausen is, like, ultimately, to your point, Rich, about how he is, like, so is able to cut through the BS and just, like, is hyper focused on what he's looking for. What he's actually looking for is answers to why his brother is missing, or, like, why, I mean, it was the whole Alexander thing, who, like, took the what's it called, the identity of his brother, and, like, the crime, something that kind of never goes anywhere, but also I don't care, because what's important is that Clausen helps to cause the apocalypse. But just, again, like, a person who has a selfish, rooted in love, right, but no less selfish drive that is keeping them going and moving them forward.
It's exactly what Peter just said again, right? Like, some things it's impossible to let go of. And that's exactly where we're at with Clausen. He's, like, relentlessly pursued this for decades, for 33 years, I guess.
Which is so impressive that he has this tenacity, he has this drive. He doesn't have a driver's license. So that's so impressive.
Yeah, it is, actually. This is another one that I know a lot of German viewers were like, you need to have a driver's license to become a police officer in Germany.
This led to
an insane amount of speculation. Clausen is from the past. Who is Clausen? What's going on here? But I think that in a certain way, it's just a manipulation, right? He could totally be like, have a driver's license to be lying to them.
She's got
to
pick him up and they got to talk in the car.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah. You ever had an awkward car ride? It's not fun. Might as well talk, you know.
You might as well just roll out of a moving car. That's less painful
An awkward car.
The pavement rug burn that you will get on your arms is less painful than the awkwardness of sitting in an awkward car.
And you know what? It's really easy to know why Clausen didn't take the forest road. He can't drive. He doesn't take the forest road. Walder comes in with the parent statement, and Clausen just looks at him. It's so awkward. And then Charlotte's like, thanks, Walder. It's so funny. He leaves. And then she's like, I have an office for you down the hall.
Yeah. He says, please get away from me.
Yeah. Disappointment is the result of false expectations. Have hope, my mom always said, and no expectations. Maybe you expected someone different and got me, but I don't believe in coincidence. Things come together because they belong. And he hands her a report and a pencil. Get to work, Charlotte. We got to reread the parent statements. So funny. I think it's great.
So annoying.
I love that Rich's hates point, her. Or she hates him. Sorry.
Yeah, he's so easy. Like Rich said, you love to hate him. He's like so good at being that character. You know, kudos to the actor. But it's infuriating. Like Charlotte has real detective work to do. After
time
hours,
travel.
Please leave her alone.
Yeah, she's got a time cop, dude. What are you doing? Yeah. He just is. He's a really great character. You know, the guy just seems so composed. He's got like a James Bond level of like professionalism that is like unparalleled, man. And it's really scary. And again, I think like, you know, as much as you could say, like some of the storyline may not like pan out. I think it does to your point, Ariel. But this notion. Expectations lead to disappointment. Have hope, not expectations. And like, look at Jonas again and again, the stranger. Once I do this thing, we'll close the portal and end it all. And it doesn't happen. And it's again, it's like these expectations that like so many of our major players have. And the lack of like fulfilling those expectations leads them to these darker and darker paths, all the way back to the opening again, the Nietzsche. They become the monsters that they hunt because of these like unfulfilled expectations that they're constantly projecting in front of themselves. I just think thematically so much of this stuff like really lines up in a very like cohesive way as a whole that it's easy to overlook it, you know, and like miss the forest for the trees, but this stuff is threaded really effectively together.
I also did just rewatch this in December and I totally forgot that Clausen is Alexander Kohler's brother. So I forgot that.
Wild. So, there's a lot of details to remember here.
All right. We're in Mikkel's room. Marta goes to check in seemingly on Katarina, but she's not in there. And there's papers everywhere and there's investigation files. And so she starts looking at them. She sees the door in the cave. So she's going to do some work. Katarina is in the cave and she's lost. And I think this is a good time to bring up Steve's feedback, which is, so was Katarina unable to find the time tunnel in the caves because she got lost, or did something else? Is Jonas blocking the way? He destroyed the entrance, but he seems to be saying he did that in 2053. She can't open it. Is it because she can't find the tunnel? She can't find the door, right?
I don't know. I think there's like an interesting question here as to the map. And it doesn't ever pan out, but like, is there a causality between like this map and Jonas's map? Like, she's got the stuff that she got from Ulrich, but we see her making notations. Like, there's points where she's stopping in the cave drawing on it, and we don't ever get like clarity there on what happens. But I could imagine that like it's just a little misleading, like wandering around through this cave system. She doesn't have the Geiger counter to like follow the signal was a big beat, right? Yeah,
she's just not she has the tools or some of the tools, but she just doesn't know how to use them, which is a thing that's pretty common around these parts.
So, I mean,
and she's looking through the wrong door too, right? Like, notably, if she's working off like Ulrich's stuff, it's about this steel door that Alexander welded shut to the power plant. And she's not looking for the Sigmundus entrance. She's not looking for the rope and the Ouroboros and all of this, the red yarn, you know? So I don't know. There's a little ambiguity there, but I think it's worthy for Steve to like point attention to it.
Yeah. I think part of it, like, it is some silly, but like, she also can't find it because she can't go back in time yet. So she has to be lost in the cave.
Yep. I think that's fair.
You know? So
she does get there eventually, but just not yet.
I think to Steve's point, as he'll bring up later, it's just very funny that like old Helgi can find it who has cement and not Katarina. So
listen, he can do that in his sleep, probably. He traveled that tunnel so many times. But yeah, Ulrich and now Katarina have been basically living in that tunnel from the looks of the filth on their skin. You know, whatever, I get it. They lost their children and each other, but still.
Yeah. So Noah is looking at this painting on the wall, and we hear Adam. It's remarkable people don't crack given the futility of their own existence, an endless cycle of life and death. Where is the origin of all this suffering? And Adam asks Noah if he told Bartosz. He says, yes. He says, he didn't get suspicion. He says, no. He has always been naive by nature. The apocalypse has to happen. And he asks him if he's having doubts. He says, no. And he says, what do you do with an old forest so it can grow new trees? You burn it down. There isn't much time left. You need to find the missing pages. This is where I believe this is Francisca who comes in and says, they're waiting for you.
Yes.
And tells Noah, six more days. Yeah.
I love the Bartosz shade. I wrote in my notes, did you tell Bartosz? And he believed you? Excellent. He's dumb. Like, it's just
literally the first thing Adam, our introduction to Adam is
him being shitty to Bartosz. I love it. Like, we already talked about their relationship and how they're basically inextricably linked to each other in their history in different forms across time. And this is hilarious. It's so good and casual. And like, at this point, we don't know on a first watch that it's Jonas, but it's so funny.
I mean, Rich, Adam. Yeah, sorry.
No, yeah.
Adam's first line is, it's remarkable people don't crack given the futility of their own existence. A bit of a nihilistic man, I think. This Adam.
It's extraordinarily nihilistic. I mean, this guy is looking for like pure annihilation, you know? His end solve here is like, we just need to destroy everything. And like,
burn the forest down.
Yeah, it's really poignant, you know, and the whole like frenemies of he and Bartosz is really hilarious that across like multiple timelines, like all of this, they still just have this like very kind of passive disdain and contempt for one another. The painting in the background, The Fall of the Damned, it's by Paul Rubens in 1620. It's so like immediately powerful and the like religious symbolism is all right here. Also like notable that as they're like talking in this room about burning down the forest, this room will burn by the end of the season. We're gonna like watch it consumed in flames and all of it to make way for what is new, you know. But yeah, the like passive Bartosz hate from like an ancient Jonas is pretty hilarious.
I think the fact that this show has so many friggin' characters and yet is able to weave in, like we talked about Clausen already, but this is Adam is such an important part to the show. It does not show up here until the beginning of season two. And I feel like he looks the part of like evil supervillain. It's very fun. He's very fun.
It's such a casual drop too, right? Like in a lot of other shows, we would talk about him all episode and not reveal him until episode two in this big, like opening scary way. But like, nope, we just pan back from Noah as he's like getting the thing and we see him sitting in the chair. And Adam could not be more like poised, composed, while also terrifying as immediately like 1,000 questions to this guy of like the scarring, all of it, like the Francisca coming in. We still don't know who she is or have context, like who's waiting for him. what is going on?
You called Klausen Bond, but I think Adam is a Bond villain. You know, it's great. Oh, you could see him in one of those movies, right? The German.
Yeah, he's just missing like his skinless cat.
That's sorry, right.
No shade against skinless cats or not hairless cats. Excuse me.
Yeah. A skinless cat would be quite an anomaly. Yeah.
So back in the present day, Magnus sees Bernie going into the box of the tracks and he follows her to the trailer. He does go inside and she's like, oh, I was on my break. I mean, I need to eat, but like, you hear the prices. You just get undressed and I'll wait. And Magnus is like, oh, no, this is not what I thought, and leaves.
Magnus panicking at the solicitation is like, one of my favorite moments. He just
he's like, what?
He plays it so shocked, right?
In this economy, absolutely not. These prices,
yeah,
that's why
he left. Yeah,
right, that's why he's left. Like, no, I can get this cheaper somewhere else. No, but to your point, Rich, it's so like we watch him basically become a child in that moment. He's like, oh my god, what? Oh my, I gotta get out of here. This is too much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Stranger Jonas is sitting with his mom. Says, "You could say I exist infinitely, but I'm here now. I'm always Jonas." I love that line. I'm always Jonas. It's very good. "I'm the same and yet not the same." And she says, "Where is my Jonas?" So I thought a little rude. Yeah, but where's my Jonas?
Where's my guy?
So he does say in the future, but he can't come back. I tried to destroy the passageway, but I only closed it. That's why he's still there. Why are you here? And he looks at the floor. He says, he looks at the floor. He looks back. So we know, because watch the whole thing, that he's come back to try to save Marta. Marta will die there. He says, to put an end to it all once and for all. Well, this is the other thing that Steve was asking. There's no, the passageway is not closed because can Katarina not find it because it's closed?
It's not physically closed. It's just no longer transports through time because of like the activation of the device inside it, right?
Right. So she could like find the Sigmundus door, but it would do nothing.
Yes. Yeah. At some point we will actually see I can't remember who it was, go into the tunnel right before it gets reactivated. And there's no, the thing for me, it's like similar to the Stranger sound. If you open that door and there's no wind, then it's not going to take you anywhere. And they open the door and there's no,
is this not
wind.
Noah and Barta? They go into the cave.
It might be. I don't remember who it is that goes.
I think in at the end of the episodes, Jonas himself will end up like going back to the passage.
Yes,
he's the one who has the expectation and knows how it should work when he opens it, right? And it doesn't, and that's like how the Stranger has the knowledge that he shut it off to begin with, right? Because I know that's a question too. How does the Stranger know he shut the passage? Because he's tried to go back through it and it doesn't work, right?
I just have to mention this. Him looking at the spot where Marta died and like that beat, it is on my, and I'm gonna paint myself into a corner here. It's on my Mount Rushmore of like dark moments. It's such a small, tiny thing, but like on a real, it is telegraphing his entire like emotional direction and basically the reason for his existence. So I think so far, again, paint myself into the corner further. So far, it's Marta's play monologue, the council of Jonas's at the end of season one across the door, and then this moment. So I only have room for one more. Stakes are pretty high for me.
Well, there could be different multiverse versions of your
Mount. True, and Mount Rushmore has 6 heads in a different universe.
Yeah, really. It's got 8. Actually, should have 12, 3 worlds. Yeah. What I love about the glance at the floor, all of the things you just noted, Ariel, I think it's so like emotionally resonant, but I also think it's a total subversion because of the way that we see him come in and stop Hannah from killing herself.
Yeah.
And we do not yet have this understanding that fate intervenes and she literally cannot die until the appointed time. We've not been like presented that as an audience yet. So I think it's really easy to like deep brain read here that the Stranger knows Hannah's going to kill herself. We're looking at the calendar. We still aren't really like 100% dialed in that that's the apocalypse countdown, even though we probably should be. And I think there's a read where you're thinking really deep about like, oh, he's looking at the floor because she was going to kill herself and that's where she would have been, and he stopped her and he's going to stop, you know, it feeds into again false expectations that are going to be unfulfilled in a way that I think is really like resonant and powerful. You know, and the other thing that I flagged here is there's a note where he's like, I tried to destroy it but I just like closed it. And he says, that's why he's still here, not there, which is very weird. And a question to me as to like, I don't know, the framing of it. It might just
say that's why he's still there.
Is it? I might have written it down wrong. I had it as that's why he's still here. No. And that like struck me. And so, yeah, I'm off on a total tangent.
Well, I could have written it down wrong, but I think it's that's why he's still there in the future. He's stuck. Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
So Elizabeth is looking at a book. It's the Cabalion, which there is a lot of Reddit stuff about the
Cabalion.
But she finds a picture of Sigmundus inside, notices Noah, and shows her dad. That's Noah. That's the man who gave me the watch.
Even I just want to say, before she gets to the Cabalion, that's the second book. We start with her open with this big picture book.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's the picture of like this heliocentric, like, it looks like the sun with two worlds on either side. But this is it. This is the whole thing right here.
Yeah.
This is the show. They're telling us what's going on in the end game. It's very delightfully referenced in an interview in the Hollywood Reporter by one Josh Wigler interviewing the showrunners back in maybe June 2020 or something like that. But, Yanta talks specifically about a lot of the imagery of the symbolism here, but this picture Elizabeth's looking at, it's a woman blowing on one world and a man blowing on another, the worlds of Adam and Eve, and this central world that we can misinterpret as the sun, but is clearly the origin world, Tannhaus's world, the perfect world, the paradise, perhaps, that Adam postulates. And we're going to see that image later in season three in maybe the Sigmundus quarters. And I don't know, it's really fascinating, this notion that like Adam would have been around this picture and not able to figure out the third world theory because he almost thinks he's creating it, right? He's trying to like create this paradise on his own. But the foreshadowing's incredible. And then the whole connection to the Cabalion, it's like this hermetic text that digs in like these really deep principles, a lot of which we can extrapolate straight on the dark.
Yeah, there's like seven, what is it, like seven
Yeah, it's these seven core principles, the whole like hermetic philosophy. It's kind of this merging between like the Egyptian god Thoth and then Hermes, the Greek god who like brings knowledge to us in certain ways. And it's this very kind of like proto-science that advances out of it. And the Emerald Tablet is deeply tied to this. It comes out of like all these hermetic teachings or whatever. But you have all these various principles, specifically the principle of polarity, where everything is dual, everything has two poles, like exactly opposites. Also the principle of gender, which is like not explicitly about like necessarily like sex and gender in like humans, but it's again about this notion of like duality and mirrors, right? And then the principle of correspondence. There's seven principles in this book, but these three like seem to be some of the most relevant to what we're talking about, where correspondence talking about like coincidentality and like three planes of existence, all of this stuff. Clearly these guys love their ancient alchemical symbols, and symbology is such a big theme for them that they play with here. But you can dig pretty deep into the Cabalion and these hermetic principles and extrapolate big theories on the dark, I think.
If you Google Cabalion dark, you'll get this Reddit thread. And actually it was made before, actually, Bo tweeted out a picture of the Cabalion while he was filming season two. So then people went to Reddit and not to Reddit. They read the book and then they went to Reddit. And so there's lots of threads you can read. Noah's looking at a picture of the family. I always love this one. There's a part of me that's like, how'd they get these specific pictures? Cause some of them are like, should not be, they're not like, they're like looking, they're taken from a distance very candidly, but whatever. But I love there's Claudia's like bunker wall, you know, thing. And then there's like Adams, which is like old timey, like all the families and things with other people on the sides. I love it. I love this thing. And Noah's going to take the briefcase with him, seemingly with the time machine in it.
Yeah,
That's why, even though the past is closed, because he has a time machine. Forgot.
Yep, he's got the time machine now. But even the way that the pictures are set up, right? It's the four key families: Conwell, Doppler, Tiedemann, Nielsen, and then at the bottom, off on the left, is Silja, and then Noah and Agnes off to the side, and like all these pieces being here and kind of getting teased out. It's really fun.
Yeah. So we're at the police station, and Clausen is telling Charlotte, watch out for the tiniest deviations in their statements. And then Charlotte gets a text from Peter. Peter says he's found a picture of Noah. Come to the bunker. She says he has to go, and this is where he says he doesn't have a driver's license, so he'll need a ride tomorrow in the morning. And yeah, I think to your point, Rich, this is a power move, specifically just to make sure that Charlotte drives him. Jonas goes back to the bunker. He's looking at a map, and he grabs a device, like a radiation device, and he grabs the pendant as well. Everybody's working. Marta's looking through the files, and Magnus comes in, and they think that Katarina might have been looking for the cave door that goes into the power plant. I love Marta saying this. Like, they all know something we're not supposed to know. Mom, Bartosz, each with their own shitty secret. I like this, Rich.
I love it. They are. This is the problem, right, Ariel? Yeah. Like, they're all keeping secrets from each other. It's feeding the whole, like, the whole festering wound that is Vinden.
Right, and I thought it was super interesting for her to be saying it to Magnus. Apparently, I can't remember his name. To Magnus specifically, who hears that a lot from Francisca. So I just thought it was like an interesting, like, mirroring back, repeating stuff about secrets to Magnus when he's like heard that before, kind of.
Poor Magnus, man. There was a world in like early on in season one where I thought Magnus was going to be much more relevant than he is along the way. But this poor guy just ends up being such a tool, like used by everybody else, along with Francisca. I feel bad for Magnus and Francisca. They have a
tough fight. They age beautifully, both.
They sure do.
So I'm so proud of them for that.
All right. Bartosz goes to the cave. He meets Noah. Noah asks if he's ready. He says yes. And they go inside the cave. Bernie at the trailer, Waller comes out and he's like, thanks for the coffee. And he gives her money. And then she gives him keys. He's bought the truck. She says, I'm glad to get rid of that thing. And then he says, call mom again. Okay. And they hug, and it's very sweet and cute. Well, it's so thinking we're gonna
sweet.
Waller's being paying for something. Yeah. That's a sister, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I love
cute.
It's so sweet, just the way like she pats him, like she's like surprised that he hugged her, and then she like pats him so genuinely and like rubs his back.
And then Waller gives the old buddy bro, double pat.
Yeah, cool.
Yep, okay, yeah, this is showing emotion in a family. Yep, okay.
I really like it. It's such an earnest moment. You know, we've talked about the depiction of Bernie as like not being ideal, but this like acceptance from her brother, like all of it's really great. And this whole notion that like, oh yeah, we've quietly been paying you off to like just keep an eye on the radioactive waste that we're hiding from everybody. It's like pretty fantastic also, you know. It's a great beat.
Yep. All right. Charlotte drives to the bunker. Peter shows her the picture of Noah. Elizabeth says she found it in the store in the book. They look at the back and it says January 8th, 1921, Sic Mundus. And says, who are these people? Peter says, why did your grandfather have this? And she doesn't know, but she does pin it on the wall. It's evidence now.
Yeah. Pin it on the wall.
Yeah.
And I love them working together, Rich. They're like, oh, they found like common ground.
They actually communicated about something.
Yeah, it's really actually kind of beautiful that the two of them are like working on the secret mission. The sad thing is that they have abandoned taking care of their children. They're going to spend like days in this bunker obsessing on this while they leave their two daughters at home. And this is a little bit problematic, but I do love seeing them get on the same page. There's like an affection and camaraderie between the two of them that I really do enjoy like seeing come to fruition here in season two.
Right? We get a bit of a montage. So we're gonna get Magnus is trying to call Francisca as she's sitting on the couch with Elizabeth. Hannah is looking at Jonas's scars while he's sleeping in bed. Regina's sleeping in a hospital bed in her house. Alexander is burying the barrels. Clausen is looking at the evidence wall, and young Noah is at the church. These are all the montage.
Yeah, a few beats. Clausen also has the old ass letter. This is the first time we're going to see the letter that like he will pull out for Alexander, a demand that he read later about like the plight of his brother. So this is the beginning of like, if we're paying attention, Clausen's got his own secret motivations and is not nearly as up and up front as he seems. And all this is a montage is playing to this song from Agnes Obel called It's Happening Again. And it feels as though written for the show when you're like listening to it. I swear it's true. The past isn't dead. It's alive. It's happening in the back of my head. No future, no past, no laws of time. Can't undo what's happening when I close my eyes. It goes on to have a lot of like incredibly spot on references to the stuff we're dealing about with Dark. And I actually found a really fun Reddit comment from Agnes Obel talking about how she had no clue. She got to know the show after she sold them the rights to the song. And she's under the impression that the music is like one of the final pieces that they kind of layer into all of it. She's never been in contact with any of the people behind the show, but she found it incredibly strange how It's Happening Again fits so perfectly into the series and this idea of the eternal return, and talks about how like she was also like like very inspired by Nietzsche in terms of like writing that song. But this is one of these perfect moments of like these magnificent artists off on their own, creating cool stuff, like being able to discover one another, that I just find really cool. It's cool. It's synchronicity in the real world that I dig, you know?
That's cool. So in the future, Jonas is walking through the forest. He does manage to, you know, sort of the drone, the hovercraft misses him, and he goes to the wall and there's a hole. So he goes through it and his sensor is clicking as he's in the power plant, and leads him to the hazmat suit. So he puts one on and there's Sic Mundus, creates his S, is on the wall and he goes inside. And the final bit of the episode is him seeing the big orb. The, what are we going to call this thing?
The blue black bubble.
The bubble.
Is it an anomaly? I want to give it a very like ridiculous word. Yeah.
Like abomination. I like anomaly.
I was gonna say the lightning orb. So yours is way cooler. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the last beat of the episode. It's great.
Wow. Yeah, that's now this thing, now this character, we have to get to know this orb now.
Yeah, who's really.
They did a great job casting the orb at both its young,
young orb, old orb, always looking so much alike.
Yeah. Even very close to middle orb. It's pretty wild how much time they run out from the end here without a single word of dialogue, right?
Yeah.
They're able to convey like an insane amount of information of Jonas making his way into this place without him saying a word. The whole like appearance of the orb is like, okay, this is the point where like your brain starts leaking out of your ears, like the questions, you know, your head's on fire. How? Yes, Netflix, I want to watch the next episode. Yes, please. It's an awesome end. This is a really like great stinger to this episode.
And it's 100% so ominous. Agree. And the sound effects coming from the orb are super, super cool. The the whooshing gurgles.
Yeah. All right, let's do MVP and LVP. So we had two people write in. So first, Steve, we'll start with LVP. I kind of hinted at who it was. So it says Katarina, nearly every character we've seen enters the cave up to this point has stumbled upon the time tunnel almost by accident, including in one instance, an actual dog. You came here with maps and you still couldn't find it. That's pretty inept, Katarina. You get my LVP point this week. That's from Steve. And Trevor gives it to young Noah for killing his father, young adult Bartosz. So Noah and Katarina will each get half a point. Rich, who do you want to give your LVP point to?
Gosh, my LVP point is feels kind of tough. There's part of me like looking back at that Marta Bartosz conversation, but that like feels bad to tag either of them. Like, yes, young Hanno does kill his father. That feels like it could be worth something potentially. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking through my process. I hope this is okay. I think that.
I mean, you could go back the line. I think there is like part of me was like. Yeah, Noah kills his dad, but Adam makes him kill his dad, right? So it's
You know who I'm going to give it to? I think it's going to be Magnus, because what a dick, dude. Why don't you just ask your girlfriend what's going on with the money exchange? How are you going to like make this crazy assumption? I know that he doesn't actually like accuse her until next episode, but the whole thing of like everybody's telling secrets, and then he spies on her. It just feels like a bad look, dude, for like one of the healthiest relationships. I hate seeing Magnus be a crappy boyfriend, so I'm giving him the LVP. Is that allowed? Yeah,
that's allowed. Ariel, what do you think?
I do agree, because and it feels like a step back for them, or at least on his side, right? Like they've been through so much, and like you think they trust each other, and to your point, I think they're in a place now where they should be able to just talk to each other and be like, what are you doing? I saw you. Yes, I followed you, but like I want to just talk to you about it. Please, can we talk about it? Whatever.
I agree. I almost thought that like a lot of this stuff, I thought that the box stuff and like the fact that we're going to learn that Franciscus is basically selling Bernie hormones. I thought that was like season one, because I felt like it was all caught up in the, like, you know, when he goes and follows her into the room and he like, you know, into the change room, like I kind of thought it was all wrapped up in that. And so I forgot that it like weirdly gets extended, you know?
Yeah. I kind of thought that had been resolved as well. Just at least as far as like, if not from like a plot standpoint, certainly from like an emotional standpoint between them again. God, I want to give it to Hannah, but I can't, I don't think, because she actually has some pretty like sweet moments after her like horrible.
He does say, where's my Jonas, even though she's talking to Jonas.
You hate that.
This is as good as it gets for poor Hannah.
I, I don't know. I might have to give it to... I want to give it to Clausen, but I feel like he'll get his share because he causes the apocalypse. I actually have to give it to Noah, and specifically, yeah. I know, like, as far as the points, we're not going to differentiate, but I am specifically awarding it to middle Noah, I guess older Noah, because he's like convincing his younger self to do a thing that he's not really 100% sure is true, or he believes it to be true, but he's working on half information, like half truths, and it just feels like he's going through a lot. First he killed kids, now he's convincing his younger self, like he's doing a lot of stuff for Adam, aka Jonas. So I think he should be docked a point for that.
He does try to like address the grief of like, I know that you're dealing with some heavy stuff, don't worry, it will go away.
I felt it. I felt it because I did it as well. Yeah I'm going to give my point to Adam, so essentially Jonas, because I think that he's the one making Noah kill Bartosz, right? It's like, you know, so yeah, I'm going to go up all the way the chain of command.
But I wasn't necessarily sad that Bartosz was killed, so
Okay, fair enough.
No, I keyed. But yeah, that makes sense to me.
All right,
I love the idea that old Noah is like, it's okay, you're gonna hang out with this kid a lot.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to deal with a lot of them. You'll be ready to kill him by the time you're my age, you know.
That's right. All right, so for MVP, so Trevor gives it to adult Elizabeth for being such a badass, and Steve actually goes the same way. This week goes to Elizabeth Doppler. You did it, Elizabeth. You survived the apocalypse. In spite of your hearing disability, 33 years later, you're not just surviving, you're a leader. Impressive stuff.
Thriving.
So one whole point to Elizabeth Doppler from the fans, from the podcast listeners.
You did it.
I love Steve's catchphrase of you did it. It's really
I do too. Steve really is killing me with the you did it. You did it, Elizabeth. You became a warlord in the post-apocalyptic future where you murdered French scientists trying to find the betterment of humanity at the center of this destructive moment. You did it.
Citing God. I can go first. I do think who do I want to give my point to? I do feel like I could give it to Jonas. He does find the orb. He does find it. I think would make some sense. I don't know if anybody else. And also, like, if I just give it to Jonas, I'm also giving it to Stranger Jonas, who has a nice moment with his. He came back to try and save Marta.
Yeah, he kept his keys. MVP he kept for his the keys.
Yeah, it's so tough, like, when you're time traveling to find, like, you know, a place that will cut keys, you know?
It's
so
hard enough keeping your keys as a non-time traveler. I can't imagine.
Yeah, the other people I'd be interested in is maybe, like, you know, Peter and Charlotte finally talk, but I'll give mine to Jonas, just mostly so I can both have given Jonas an MVP and an LVP point in the same episode. Ariel, what are you thinking?
I can go next, yes. Yeah. I'm going to give it to Marta because she breaks up with Bartosz and she doesn't have a lot of time left, this version of her. So live your life, Marta. Get away from this guy who's lying to you and, yes, has a very tragic story, but go be with Jonas and go be with Stranger Jonas, but, like, not. That's really creepy and we'll get to that, but, like, go long and miss your Jonas.
I love that technically, I think Bartosz is the one who's like, that's it then. It's done. She doesn't even really break up with him. She just shows up.
I would agree.
But I would argue that she is putting out the energy that makes him say that. She's like, oh, I wanted to talk to you. And he's like, don't bother. I already know. So, like, had he allowed her to, she would have broken up with him.
It's big, did you quit or get fired energy, I think.
She quiet really quit this relationship. Good for her. You did it, Marta. You did it.
What do you think, Rich? Who are you going to give your MVP points to?
I just love Ariel's enduring perseverance. You stay in Marta's camp. It doesn't matter if she's the real Marta or not, Ariel. I am with you. I love it. You ready? I'm going to give my MVP point to Clausen because this guy is spot on. He's terrible. I hate him. I do not love him as a character, but I love these characters that are like advancing things, that are driving our story forward. And this guy comes in at a nowhere starts rattling cages, man. He's stressing out Charlotte. He's pissing off Eric Oberdorfer's dad. He's talking about elephants. But he just, as like a new character emerging on the scene, he's so well realized so quickly. In just a handful of scenes, you realize like this guy's sharp. He's got it together. He's manipulating the hell out of these people, and he's gonna like get one of them in a bad position. And I really like the energy on the rewatch. So I'm all Clausen.
100% of episodes for Clausen, he gets MVP points so far. That's very impressive.
Yeah, to your point, Rich, I do love that he's brought on as someone who, like we already said, and like you said, really, like he's this that new kind of antagonist where we're all in our feelings about our characters who we love, and this guy, he's annoying our characters and he's annoying us. Like, get out of here, buzz off. And he feels so unimportant, and ultimately he's very important to the plot.
Yeah.
He just is like such a sharp edge, right? Like he threatens like the forward momentum of our story in a way that like he's really disturbing, and he's got a powerful presence, and I kind of love that.
All right, so just to recap on the LVP leaderboard, Hannah still remains top spot, but Katarina closing behind. Hannah has 7 points. Katarina has 6.5 points. And then we have Bartosz and Helgi both at 4. On the MVP leaderboard, we have Elizabeth on top now with 4.5 points. Ulrich, Marta, and Jonas all at 4. That feels about right coming into the season. I'm afraid Ulrich is going to have very little chance to earn some points moving forward, but strong start from Ulrich.
He's so big in season one, right? He's such like a kind of dominant character, and I think that's part of what's brilliant about this show too, that I think a lot of ways you come back to season two and like anticipate Ulrich, like, where's Ulrich, what's going on? And like, no, nah, man, his fate is
you sealed. Get Clausen.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right, we're gonna start, I think, in season two. Let's start rating the episodes. And I think on the thing, I put initially a 1 to 5 a ranking. I believe that folks listen, I think one person gave it a 5, one person gave it a 4, so really high episode. We can get as granular as we want here. I don't know. Do we have a scaling system we officially want to use? Is 1 to 5?
Sure, we want to go 1 to 33. Is that like insane?
Oh, okay. I like it.
I'm gonna go like 27.7.
See, I went like, cool. Yeah, I was thinking 1 to 3, and you really had to limit yourself. But 1 to 33.
We could call it 1 to 3.3.
Yeah, 1 to 3 points. Yeah. I think you can go decimal if you want to, because this is the thing that happened. We did in this like Succession, and we every time like when we're doing it was either a 3 or a 4, like pretty much. So it was like kind of, so I think you can go decimal if you want, but
okay. Yeah. And my ceiling is a 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to go 3.
Yeah,
I do honestly, like, you know, you talked about it early on, Grace, but we're coming back off of like a very big season, the first season of television of this show, and this could have been such a disaster. Coming back to something like this heady, this conceptual, foreshadowing so many ideas, like I'm paying forward a little bit of what's going to get paid off later on in the season and even in season 3. But so much foreshadowing and groundwork happens in episode 2-1. And the fact that they can come back for a second season that executes as well as it does after such a like, you know, kind of blockbuster season 1, it's really, really impressive to me. Like a little bit of hyperbole here, but I do think it's like pretty close to a flawless hour of TV.
Can I do? Whoa. I'll do the annoying thing, Erwin. I'm gonna give it a 2.9 because I really like it, but I know that there's better dark. So I'm like giving myself, as we start to do this, I'm giving myself a little bit of, as it were, wiggle room. So I'm gonna give it a 2.9, but I think it's very close to.
I was ready to like pitch my can I do half points. So I'm glad that you went even more annoying.
That's what I'm saying. I think we can be granular. You can be really grand. What are we doing on a dark podcast for not being incredibly granular?
Really, I'm gonna time travel and change my score.
I think that's on the table for sure. So
I was gonna give it a 2.5 because I was like for basically the same reason as you, that like I really like it. I don't want to give it a full 3 because I can think of at least 2 episodes that I need to give a 3 to that this one does not quite match. But if we're going to open up to like all the similar places, I'll give it like a 2.7.
Oh, okay. I like to say this on the Succession pods. As of right now, Rich likes Dark the most. He rated it a 3. I gave it a 2.9. And Arrow, you like Dark the least because you gave it 2.7.
How dare you, Arrow? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not enough Marta. That was surprising.
I like twisting.
I got to bring her back into this conversation. Yeah.
I like twisting your immediate rankings into to saying how much you like
use it against me. For the record, Marta in this episode gets a 3.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, very good. I am definitely leaning on, I think, how often we're going to look back to this episode the further along we get. As like, look at what happened in episode 2.1. This was like big time foreshadowing and setup. So
it's really good. I mean, the themes playing into like the character motivations, I think, is supremely good. Like you talk about like how the begin, you kind of think this is a thing about Noah, but actually it's going to be about Adam. So like, it's really smart. It's really good. All right, we'll be back next week with season 2, episode 2, Dark Matter. Until then, Rich, what do you got going on, and where can people find you?
Oh, a bunch of stuff. So at DM Philly on Twitter, and my DMs are open if you want to talk to me about any of this stuff. I'm streaming Dungeons and Dragons over at twitch.tv/DM Philly. And I'm talking about Star Wars, The Mandalorian, Mike Bloom and I doing the recaps right quick every week for the fast turnaround kind of recap of the episode, and then a later feedback show later in the week. Keep an eye on my Twitter for what's going on with me.
Ariel, what about you?
I am also on Twitter at that other Ariel. I am covering movies with you, Grace. We had a fun time talking Shazam, or as I was calling it, Shapow. Yeah. Fury of the Gods.
Soon as we finished the next day, all hell broke loose about Shazam news.
It was incredible. Just all the headlines coming out after, which on the one hand, like, oh, damn, we could have talked about it on the podcast that had come up, but also like,
fine, I don't need all the other
bliss.
Stuff.
Ignorance is bliss. And like, we just got to talk about the movie. Yeah. But we had a fun guest on, Isaiah from Silent Podcast. That was super fun. You and I also covering Great Expectations.
Yeah.
Olivia
Coleman, which Coleman
begins,
cast.
Yeah, Coleman cast, which begins this weekend. So we're going to get into our coverage in earnest. And I think that's it for now. It's feeling light for me right now, but that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
What about you?
So of course, movies. I also am covering Succession. So I'll be doing the immediate recap with Jess and Josh, and then doing a deep dive with Dr. Amanda. Yellow Jackets, I'll be doing the immediate reaction pod on that as well. I'm on Twitter at @HiFromGrace for everything else I am doing. We'll be back next week. Make sure to get your feedback in. PostRecaps.com/darkfeedback. Get your votes in. Get your ratings in. Get your feedback in. And we'll be back. Until next time, ultimate fist bump.
Ultimate fist bump.